Hello, I am Allison Lancey, an occupational therapist and a post-professional occupational therapy doctoral student at Boston University. I'm here today interviewing Megan McGowan, who works at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center and has been an occupational therapy practitioner for 7 years now. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to ask you a few questions that explain your experience as being an agent of change within the field of occupational therapy. So my first question for you is, describe a lived experience where you have been an agent of change in occupational therapy. What strategies did you use to be an agent of change?
Well, I guess the example I would use is not so much a changing event that happened in all of occupational therapy, but a changing event that I was a part of at my first job. So I work in an acute care setting now, but I started my career in inpatient psychiatry as an acute care therapist. And when I first started, I was a new grad, fresh out of school, with little experience, obviously. But I took the first year to really learn my surroundings and learn the policies and procedures of the inpatient psychiatry department that I was working in. And in that year, one, I was just learning how to do my job, but also I was seeing an area of need, which was how to help de-escalate our patients when they would become agitated. And I was seeing a lot of use of seclusion and restraints and medication use to help calm down our patients. And I remember learning in school about using sensory techniques to de-escalate folks. So I wanted to implement this change, but I couldn't just say, well, I'm an expert, so listen to me, because I was a new grad with no experience. So the biggest strategy I had to use to implement change was using evidence-based practice. I spent 6 months, or a little over 6 months, researching the evidence, going to conferences and interviewing experts. I created a 6-page document and delivered it to my manager and said, hi, I really think this would be helpful, expanding our program to have occupational therapists hold the role of de-escalating patients with the use of sensory materials. And don't just take my word for it, here's all the evidence. And it got approved because there was just no arguing with what I had presented to her. And the other big strategy I used, especially when implementing a sensory program to all the psychiatric units in this hospital, was really good interdisciplinary communication and knowing that OTs don't work in a silo. I had to really work with the nurses and the patient care techs and the secretaries and even the people bringing the food, on what we were trying to achieve and listening to what their concerns were as well to make sure it was as successful as it could be. And it was successful, and it was one of the coolest experiences I had probably have done in terms of implementing a new huge change in our department. But in general, as an agent of change, my theory is always just to be the change you want to see. If I want to see more empathy, if I want to see a therapist being more in tune to achieving a patient's quality of life, I have to do that myself and just be a good example. And just to not be okay with status quo and average.
In the example that you just gave, it sounds like you were definitely advocating for a population that was not being taken care of in the proper way at all. And it was definitely, you know, an occupational injustice for that population to have restraints and not being treated like humans. And I think when we go back historically to occupational therapy's role in psychiatric care in general, you know, we see how we went from treating people in a very demoralizing mm-hmm. kind of way to more of a humane treatment. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, we still even see that in acute care, mm-hmm. the use of restraints. Mm-hmm. And I think that your sensory intervention would definitely be beneficial to the acute care hospital, for sure.
I totally agree. And I just remember one of the things that impacted me the most and made me think of this was when I was a student, I went to a presentation from a person who had a mental illness who had been restrained and secluded, and she was explaining how traumatic it was for her. And so, yeah, we think of our acute care, our acute medical care, not even in psychiatry, there's a huge need.
Absolutely.
We don't want our patients to have trauma, because those effects last for an incredibly long period of time, and they could be silent for a long period of time and then affect a person's quality of life later on. So yeah, I think OT can hold a huge role in making sure our patients are treated with respect, and all efforts are made to help a person with their coping skills before resorting to safety nets like restraint and seclusion.
That's wonderful. I hope you can implement that at John Hopkins Bayview. That would be great.
That's the plan.
So my next question for you is, describe any relevant policy and system factors, so for example, payment methods, regulations, that have had an impact on your career as an occupational therapist.
Mm. Well, obviously the first thing that comes in mind as an occupational therapist working in a healthcare system is Medicare, and thinking about all the rules they have to cover certain pieces of equipment or certain services that are needed, and how sometimes that can get in the way of what we think is the best care for our patients. Like, I'll give an example. In the acute care setting, our patients sometimes come to the hospital, but they don't meet a medical criteria to be admitted to the hospital, so they come to the hospital as an observation status. But sometimes the team wants us to evaluate them because they're concerned. So we evaluate them and we say, whoa, this person really could benefit from a subacute rehab. They have rehab goals that we think can be achieved if they get PT and OT. And so that's what we recommend, but there's a Medicare rule that says they have to have 3 midnight inpatient acute days before going to rehab. And so as an occupational therapist, it's frustrating, but it also lends itself to one of our biggest strengths as a profession, which is advocating for our patient. We know what's best, and sometimes we have to be their biggest advocate. The doctor is going to look at this case and say they're medically ready to leave the hospital. The case manager and social worker may look at this case and say, this is a financial burden right now. They'll need to pay their own way to rehab. We're going to look at this case and look at the big picture. We're going to see the caregiver burnout. We're going to see the equipment needs this patient might need. We might see the supervision level they might need. We'll see some of the safety concerns, and we just have to advocate for them. And so, as frustrating as those policies can be, I think it strengthens OT's role in our ability to advocate for the patient.
So it sounds like you're an agent of change on a daily basis, just by, like, on a small scale, like a micro level systems factor, by just advocating for your patients, and that's wonderful.
I mean, we have to. And it's not at fault of the doctors or the nurses or the case managers. They have a busy, busy day. That's our role. That's our role as an OT, is to make sure our patient has a safe and good quality of life.
Good. That's great. My next question is, discuss how you have supported reaching the American Occupational Therapy Association Centennial Vision, which states, we envision that occupational therapy is a powerful, widely recognized, science-driven, and evidence-based profession with a globally connected and diverse workforce meeting society's occupational needs, and are planning to reach the 2025 AOTA vision. Occupational therapy maximizes health, well-being, and quality of life for all people, populations, and communities through effective solutions that facilitate participation in everyday living.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading the vision the other day, and it's a good reminder. One, when I think of the current vision, I feel like I support it just the science-driven and evidence-based is how I live day to day. Even though I work with specific populations and people would say I have a specialty in that area, it doesn't matter. Everything I do, I want to make sure it's either evidence-based or I'm gathering data to make it evidence-based. We want to validate what we're doing. We want to show that what we're doing has an effect. As far as the 2025 vision, I think that that's the staple of OT, is making sure we're maximizing health, well-being, and quality of life for all people. We're not physical therapists, we're not psychologists, we're occupational therapists. We're unique, we're special. We bring that unique view to seeing the big picture in a patient's world. Like, for example, I work with a specific population who have postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And currently the treatment is a rigorous exercise program. And I just happened to be overhearing a doctor and a PT talking about it. And I made a comment about what a terrible quality of life that might be. And thus my foot got stuck in the door and I got pulled into the working with that population. But I've been working with these people on improving the amount of meaningful activities in their day to start to help them return back to normal development, because I'm often working with 20-year-olds who should be going to school and going out with friends and having a healthy leisure life. So the OT proved that it's worth in this working with this population, because we can see the benefit of improving their quality of life.
That's great, especially because based on what I gathered from what you said, is, you know, physical therapy and the recommendation of just having a rigorous exercise routine when you're not feeling well and you're constantly, you know, having these POTS symptoms, you know, I think I would want, personally, I would want to use my energy and any time that I do feel good to do something that is meaningful to me. And I think that's the, like you said, the important part of OT is bringing it back to what is meaningful to the patient or client, and focusing on them.
Yeah, it's great if they can bike for 15 minutes on a stationary bike, but can they go out with their friends?
Exactly. That was great. So my next question for you is, what are some of the most important lessons you have learned as an occupational therapist, and how did you learn them?
Oh man, all the big life lessons I've learned are right from my patients. I've learned a lot about how deep empathy really is. It's not just the shallow, I understand what you're going through, but the true empathy to understand how they got to where they are in their life. What was their development process? Was it normal or was it abnormal in terms of, you know, their socioeconomic status or their educational level and that kind of thing? One of the biggest lessons I've learned as an occupational therapist is the importance of really meeting a patient where they're at and having not just the empathy on paper, but like the true actual empathy and listening to them. Then you really get to know their story, and you really, that's when you can make a change. You can never make a change if you're only half there. And I think that that's been a lesson that I've taken with me in all aspects of my life.
And I think that is a great relationship that you have with your patients and clients, because you're not only giving something to them at the end of the day, but they're also teaching you something, which is what you want out of any relationship, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So tell me about someone who has had a big influence on your career as an occupational therapist.
Oh, there's been so many, but if I chose one, it was way back, I guess only 7 years ago, when I was a student. It was a professor who was our anatomy professor, neuroanatomy professor, who wasn't an occupational therapist, but we kind of graduated him into OT, and he came up to me one day and he thanked me out of the blue, and I didn't really know what he was talking about until maybe a year or so later. And he was thanking me for helping, for me studying with the students who were not as strong students. And I always thought, okay, no worries, I'll help them study. But it actually sunk in later when he meant we often gravitate towards helping folks who are stronger but maybe only have a little bit of an injury, or gravitate to problems that aren't too complex and we can easily solve them. But it's the people who go towards the complex problems and the patients who are more complex in every sorts of dynamic that you're really doing the good work. And so after really letting that sink in, I've prided myself on taking challenges and looking at problems, and even if they're complex, breaking them down and working on them, and to gravitate towards the patients who might be overlooked and spending a little extra time with them, because that's in the end what could help them.
I can definitely see that you're you know, definitely doing that.
Aww.
With your specifically like your patients that you're just mentioning with a diagnosis of POTS, because like, again, it's not a common diagnosis, and you're looking for what's really going to drive them and what can I do to make a difference in their lives, which is really difficult because, like you said, their lives aren't easy. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't imagine living with something like that.
I know.
So that's great. Mm-hmm. That you incorporate that into your career. So what do you feel most grateful in this career as an occupational therapist practitioner?
Man, I'm so grateful, and I always joke about this with my patients that, oh, I'm a chatty Cathy. I'm grateful that I get to just hang around and talk with cool people all day, because I do. I'm so grateful that OT is client-centered, and we get this unique challenge of getting to know a person in a short period of time and getting to know their vulnerabilities and their strengths, and getting to use their strengths and help them with their vulnerabilities, and letting them almost be a mirror to our own life on our own vulnerabilities and what we can strengthen. It's a really cool, unique career to have this special relationship with people. And the cool thing about it is when you get patients coming visiting you months and years later after you work with them and realizing, like, man, I left a lasting impression on them, which was cool, but they will always hold that special part in my heart for that experience we had. Because, I mean, that's the whole human experience, is we're supposed to be social and we're supposed to interact and we're supposed to help each other up and times that we're not feeling too well. And I'm just grateful that that's what we get to do each day. It's pretty cool. I think we're a pretty cool profession.
I would have to agree with that for sure. I definitely enjoyed listening to how you have been an agent of change. Mm. Within any setting that you've worked in, clearly, whether it be psych or the acute care setting that you're in now. And I look forward to hearing about the, you know, the different things that you're going to do in the future. And thank you so much for sitting down with me and answering these questions.
Thanks, Allison. Those are good questions.